I'm Lauren from Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
And your reporters for the second edition of Season 4 of the Starling Tribune, I am Stargate Pioneer. My friends call me SP. And with me are Chris.
You know, your hand is on me.
And Neil.
I'm more like Ollie 1.0, who's trying to do things a little differently.
Let's get one thing straight. The only person who is allowed to talk in sentence fragments around here is me. So this podcast is recorded on Thursday, October 15th, 2015, live on the Blab streaming services. We are just a few guys that discuss the TV show Arrow. Just a little reminder that I am not a comic expert. I'm actually a sci-fi guy, but I'm catching up to the Arrow comic lore a little bit thanks to folks like Chris.
And I am a comic god.
And Neil, the enabler.
Yeah, you know, the first one's free, baby. After that, you know you got to pay.
All the time, all night, baby, all night. Hey, as we mentioned, we're going to be discussing the show Arrow during this podcast, and we're going to be talking about what happened in last night's episode. So you're going to get spoilers, and you might get spoilers on some of the news and little tidbits that we talk about as well. So consider yourself warned. Hey, if you are liking this podcast, you can always catch our back episodes in the off weeks and our archive at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. All right. Second episode, fourth season, The Candidate. What do you got for me, Neil?
Well, we've got director John Baring. John has directed four episodes of Grimm. So I don't know if you're a Grimm fan. I am a Grimm fan. So very happy about that. Now, you know, urban fantasy, a little bit of grit. I'm all about that. Arrow, he's done 11 episodes. So he's done The Candidate, obviously. My Name is Oliver Queen, 2015. The Magician.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That was a good one.
Unthinkable. He's done some great. He's also done Blue Bloods. He's done Rogue Time, an episode of The Flash. He's done one episode of Gotham. He's done an episode of The 100. He's done an episode of Tomorrow People. One here, one there, one all over the place. And 8 episodes of Vampire Diaries. So for genre cred, John Baring's got it down, I think. He's all over the network.
You forgot the most important one. He did 2 episodes of Hellcats. The CW cheerleading show.
My son tried to get me into that. He's like, you gotta watch it, you gotta watch it. I'm like, look, my plate's a little full right now. I think I'll catch it later on Netflix or something.
Well, he's done a lot of different TV shows, like just scrolling through here, CSIs, Mentalist, Numbers, Charm. He's been all over. That's pretty awesome.
He's a gun for hire.
Yeah, it seems that way. He did The Cape. That was a different one in 1996. I don't know what cape that is. Never mind. I was going to go on a cape rant.
I wonder how many episodes that Mark Guggenheim has actually been involved with the story, the script, the directing of Arrow, because I thought he was starting to take a little bit backseat because he's got so much on his plate right now.
He is all over the place. So this story was written by Mark Guggenheim and again by Kito Shimizu. Yeah, air date Wednesday, October 14th, just yesterday. So a solid crew that knows what they're doing behind this one.
Yeah. And with the subject matter that they carried on last episode and this episode, you have to have an experienced crew. You have to have some of those co-executive producers around and experienced directors, because if you don't, you kind of fail the rest of the storyline for the season. We don't want that. We want a good storyline.
So you're saying they have failed this storyline?
No, they don't haven't. Do that. That's my point.
They don't do that. No. There was the caveat I did in normal voice. I'm going to do the entire voice in the, you have failed this voice.
Yeah, exactly.
You have failed this microphone because you have a Marvel guy, not a DC guy on your microphone, Chris. As he goes and reaches for it. All right.
You have failed this city.
I've got some behind the photo backdrop too. Actually, some that were given to me by somebody else on this podcast. Oh, the Batman. Okay. But it's not on your microphone. So I said you failed this microphone, not your room.
How am I going to hang a Batman piggy bank off my microphone?
You need a stronger mic arm then.
I mean, even got a little money in it.
Enough of this. Let's start talking about the episode, guys. How it started with that action sequence. That was like, cool. And then the big thing with Laurel, like coming across as Ollie shooting the freaking arrow with the rope on it. That was awesome.
James Bamford, Bam Bam Bamford, man, he knocks it out of the park with the choreography. This was full on Team Arrow going after the Hive Ghosts, everybody working well together. And my favorite scene in that was when Ollie takes a step back and just smiles. He's looking at everybody doing their thing, everybody fighting, Thea, Diggle. It's too bad we didn't have Roy in the mix, but
he's too expensive now.
Yeah, that was an awesome fight scene.
He might have been one of the ghosts. Okay, so I watched that scene because it's referred to later, and I watched the scene. I specifically was watching Thea, and Ollie is so worried about Thea killing anybody. Okay, she did two longbows across the area into two guys. You can't tell me that those guys are still alive.
'Tis just a flesh wound.
Yeah, shoulder shots. Remember, shoulder shots.
It was straight into the chest. It was center mass. Those guys are done. They're dead.
Flesh wound. Flesh wound. He's fine. It's in the script.
In this episode alone, Thea's already killed two guys.
I think he looked over, and when he was concerned, I seem to remember a scene where she's on top of one of those silos and just wailing on a guy. It's classic UFC ground and pound. He's just looking over and frowning at that point. It's like, yeah, Thea, I think he's down. Down, girl.
Yeah, so you know where we've seen something similar before? It reminds me a lot of Roy when he's on the Mirakuru.
Ugh.
I'm having flashbacks, and not in a bad way necessarily, but it's kind of ironic that both the Red Arrow characters are slowly losing it.
Right. So Roy had a little bit of different feel to him. He was never stable the entire time. He was always skittish. He was always... Thea is fine for moments, and then there's moments where the rage comes on, and it's like, oh, I don't want to be in the same room as she is. Oh, my God. I don't want to get my butt handed to me, because she would kill me. She would cripple me and kill me right then and there. She almost did it to Ollie.
Yeah, well, hey, I guess we're talking fight scenes. So the second great fight scene of the show was Ollie versus Speedy. And what I loved about that fight, if you, again, take a look at how it was choreographed, was it was in an enclosed space, not in a big warehouse, not outside, just in that room, knocking into all the furniture with the rest of Team Arrow just standing there and watching. And I think to have a fight that's that dynamic, now, granted, it's not a hallway. You know, not to cross the streams.
Or an elevator, if you want to cross the streams.
We don't even know where this place is. In my opinion, it looks like the basement of the Verdant again. But okay, keep going.
Yeah, but it was great choreography. It used the furniture. It was tight. You had the onlookers there. I think Arrow should get nods continually, not only from us, but from the rest of the, you know, the film community for how they choreograph these fights week after week.
The fight scenes on Arrow, we've said before, some of the best that are on TV. Literally, the only thing that beats it TV-wise, in my mind, is Daredevil, and that's not fair to compare because they spent about three times as much time filming a single episode.
The Daredevil fights weren't dispersed. They were generally all the same thing going on, right? Now, Arrow has the multiple fights going on at the same time. Remember that fight with Nyssa and with Oliver and... all that, and Malcolm, all that stuff going on at the same time in the warehouse at different levels and everything. That is what I remember about Arrow choreography. You have awesomeness happening simultaneously, and it's all interrelated. It's just awesome.
And what you also have, if you really break down the fights, is you've got multiple fighting styles that are being choreographed in the same scene. You've got Ollie with his style, Thea, which fights very different. You've got Canary that's fighting more with the boxing and the baton style. You've got Diggle, which is brawling and shooting. And the choreographer has to acknowledge all these styles, set them apart as distinct characters because their fighting styles are as much a part of them as their costumes and their dialogue is, and incorporate it all into one scene. And again, week after week, they knock it out of the park.
They do. I just look forward to it. And if there's never a fight scene in an Arrow episode, you know, something's, it's like,
It's not an Arrow episode if there's no fight scene, man. Let's be honest.
It's just a CW show. It's not Arrow. It's not a comic book show.
I defy anyone to find me an episode of Arrow where there's not one single fight scene in it. I don't think it exists.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah, you're probably right. Even some of the slower ones in season 3 had at least one fight scene thrown in.
Right.
Okay, so I've got an observation for you guys. These ghosts, they are trained by the same people that train stormtroopers because they can't hit anything. They're unloading full clips. She's not that hard to hit. I mean, she's moving around, but you're spraying and praying and you're hitting like 3 feet below her. Come on. You can hit her. Yeah, just aim a little higher, little higher.
Now, while we're talking fights, we might as well get the third fight scene in this episode, which is the only one I kind of had some issues with. And that was Ollie and Speedy versus Anarchy back in the theater. And the only thing that bugged me, aside from the ending, and I kind of dug the ending of that fight, but Ollie is facing a guy that is using a two-handed fighting technique, right, which we've seen before. Ollie has gone toe-to-toe versus probably the best hand-to-hand combatant in the world, if you consider Ra's al Ghul the best in the world, and doesn't get his butt handed to him. Yet Anarchy, the guy with stun batons.
I had that in my notes, too.
He got killed by Ra's al Ghul.
Okay, the first time. The first time, man. Come on.
But he got better, right? It was only a flesh wound. He came back to life.
He held his own.
And he trained Rocky style.
The training montage. Insert here.
Yeah, I'm having Babylon 5 flashbacks. He's like, but he got better.
He is one of the best machines. I was going to say killing machines, but best fighting machines on the planet. If you have Ollie in the room, better be on my side because I'm not going against him. And yet, you're right. Anarchy is able to take him down. And I'm like, nah, no, I don't buy it. And the only thing I could think of is plot requires so that Thea could come in and set him on fire. That's the only way I saw that happening.
And if we just nod and smile and say, yep, the plot required that, moving on.
Everyone has a bad night occasionally. That could be what happened.
He is a little rusty. And in the big fight thing, he wasn't really engaged. So, yeah, maybe. But he is one of the best fighting machines on the planet. He's a great assassin, a great soldier. He's got just unbelievable natural ability. And that was hard for me to swallow, but I was like, okay, you know, whatever. And then into unbelievable stuff, Quentin is like all of a sudden not on his camp anymore because the guy ends up fried Krispy Kreme. Really? I mean, he's not dead. They tried. What would have happened if he had something? He would have killed Jessica. And let's go back to Jessica. Did Anarchy like cut one of her fingers off? What did he get from that closet? It was like a knife, wasn't it? So when he did the little pinky swear, didn't he cut that finger off?
No, he just bent it and I think broke it.
Yeah, I bent it and broke it back.
Yeah, they're not going that dark.
No. Now remember, this is the happy season of Arrow.
Yeah, it's real happy so far, isn't it?
Don't put your hand on me. Just don't do it. I was like, why are you letting this guy get away with it? It's because he just didn't want to deal with the daughter anymore.
Because it serves his plans.
And why was that a step too far? I mean, you're talking about a guy that will just reach out, touch somebody, and kill him. Why is kidnapping a daughter a step too far?
It's putting an innocent into the line of things. He's got a code of honor. It's twisted and warped in his mind, but screwing with someone's children.
Let's go back an episode where he loaded a train full of explosives and was going to drive it into the train station. There may have been some innocents at the train station.
He doesn't care who he hurts in the city. What's about this one chick? I mean, come
on. That's not the right way to do it. He's got a twisted and weird code of some kind. We're going to see more of it, I'm sure.
He gets a pass on that one.
Take off, nukes the site from orbit. It's the only way to be sure. I mean, I don't get it. He's hurting people the entire time. That's what he is. That's what he's doing. But Neil McDonough, nice. Nice. Whenever he's on screen, you're like, whoa.
What's he going to do next? Oh my God.
He is deliciously evil.
Yum, 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 yum.
I think Ollie made the right call. She's losing it. You know, when she snaps the arm behind the back of the drug dealer who was, you know, arguably still a drug dealer, but probably didn't deserve the arm bar to the arm snappy snap. Going a bit far, going a bit cray-cray at times.
But here's the thing. Season 1 Oliver would have probably done the same thing. It just shows how much he's evolved as a character. He would have done it, not cared, and then potentially just shot the guy to be done with it.
Oh, I miss Season 1 Ollie.
Yeah, he was a unique character.
I don't miss Island Season 1 Ollie, though.
Oh, no.
Come on, guys. Wait, why don't we just go home? Come on, guys.
I just want to go home, guys.
So the question is, have we seen the last of the wig? By the end of that season, or of this episode, the last flashback that we see, there's no more wig.
Oh, we know he's going to have a wig again.
Yes, because when he gets rescued,
Remember, episode one, he's got giant hair and a big bushy beard. So somewhere in the next 2 years, he has to grow his hair out that long and have a ginormous beard.
I think the beard he has on right now is the biggest beard that I have seen on him.
Possibly. I'd have to go and look.
So obviously, the island sequences were not filmed the same week as the rest of it, unless the beard is fake.
It could be. I don't know.
It's the Starling Tribune Beard Report.
We need breaking news coverage every time we do the beard report.
Reporting in from the Starling Tribune chopper, the beard report.
Screw the traffic report. This is more important.
Hey, since we're talking about the island, though, has anybody else read Green Arrow Year One? So when Andy Diggle effectively rebooted Green Arrow's history a few years ago, I think about 6 or 7 years ago now, he was on the island, and the island had people growing opium poppies, and they were using local island residents as slave labor, and it seems like we've got Arrow Year One, at least it's what we see so far.
I was wondering why they were, you know, whipping these people over these nice little purple flowers. I mean, it's just a daisy field, really, right?
Well, it was the wrong color for poppies. That's why I was confused at first. I was like, what are they doing?
They're probably a mystical herb that he's going to add to his big box of magic herbs.
He's got to have his magic herbs that cure everything. And this is what it is. It's the magic opium poppies that aren't really poppies.
Yeah. You don't actually get better, but you feel better.
Maybe that is what it is. He just gives everyone opium and they just think they're better. Here, chew on this. Okay.
Dude, I feel great.
Dude, your arm is falling off. I don't feel a thing.
I got better. Let's go, man. That's what really had happened to Deathstroke, right? He's just pumped full of opium.
It wasn't Mirakuru. It was opium.
Network owner Stephen Wondrew has mentioned a couple of things in chat, which we have to discuss. First of all is Mayor Queen.
So kudos to Mark Guggenheim for giving us the huge swerve on this, because everyone's been saying it for the past few episodes, like, oh, is Ollie going to be run for mayor? Things like that. And he was always going, nah, it'd just be too complicated to get into the politics of it. You got to have parties. You got to do debates. And then as this episode's wrapping up and Jessica's like, I don't think I'm going to do it, I went, Mayor Queen, I bet. And as soon as that happened, I was like, yes, nailed it. And then I was going, but kudos to them for not giving it away. Well done.
Because how do you get away with no debates, no campaigning? You make him run totally unopposed.
I do want to give credit to my girlfriend at the time. She goes, yeah, great idea. Make him the mayor. We saw how well he ran a company.
Your girlfriend at the time, does that mean that you no longer have a girlfriend?
No, no. My girlfriend at the time that showed up on screen. Let me rephrase.
Okay. We just had to clarify that. Oh, does that mean you're engaged now?
Oh, shut up.
Did you put a ring on it?
No. Let's continue with the show.
The other thing Steven brought up, by the way, since we're talking about women, is the boob window. Sarah's looking hot. That's what Steven put in the chat.
She's looking a little skinny. She's lost a few pounds.
Just a little bit. I was surprised there wasn't bugs, you know, maggots. Yeah. So I'm very grateful there wasn't, because I didn't want this to turn into an episode of Walking Dead. Which basically it kind of did, because when Theo was beating up on Oliver, she looked like a zombie at that point.
Well, she was out of her mind a little bit.
Yeah, she had kind of lost it.
So I'm kind of bummed this is the route they're going to bring Sarah back. I take some of my conspiracy theories off the table, where I thought it might have been Damian Dark holding Resurrection over Captain Lance's head, or it might have been something Roz does to make amends for what had happened. Granted, he could still say use the pit to make amends, but to have it be Thea finally tells the story of how she survived to Laurel, and Laurel go, oh, let's put Sarah in the pit. I was like, ah, man.
You have a sister. A sister.
Now Obi-Wan's failure is complete.
Exactly.
And Thea's like, are you sure this is a good idea? Are you sure you want to do... I don't know about this.
I like how she says that after they've dug up the grave already. She's like, are you sure this is a good idea?
The time to ask that question was when you came with shovels.
Okay. Let's back up a second, right? Where is that grave? We've been calling for it for in the preseason and last episode. We actually got a Queen Mansion scene, because that's exactly where that grave is, in the backyard.
Is it?
Yeah, it's right there.
No, I don't think it can be. Can it?
Yeah, it is. Remember the season one scenes of Thea coming from the mansion, going down and see Oliver, and Sarah's grave was right there.
Okay, now let's take a step back. That's no longer the Queen Mansion. You're the realtor trying to sell this mansion to a new family. Here we have the gazebo and the pool and the nice foyer. Oh, and the small grave in the backyard.
That's just been dug up.
I actually have some legal knowledge of this, okay? People in the ground, you can't dig up without an excessive amount of legal action, right? So it's just easier to keep them there and just call it like a sacred place, and then that's your new family burial ground.
I don't know, man. If you can afford the Queen Mansion, you can afford a few lawyers to get those bodies
it's
moved.
It's not just a few lawyers, though. I mean, it's literally like major laws that you have to change. Because those places are considered holy ground or whatever.
I also now love the image that whenever they want to go to the grave, they're breaking into somebody's backyard to go visit those graves. Sorry, don't mind us.
That's my point. Whoever's in that house now, and I think the Queen's actually own it in some trust, whatever. Because there's nobody in Starling that can afford it that wants to stay there. They've all skipped town.
That's true.
Yeah, good point.
They could turn it into an orphanage like they did in Batman.
Or an asylum.
Yeah.
All right. What else you guys got for the episode?
Last thing is Anarchy. So he's coming back. He's coming back as a burned ambulance escaping loony. What do we think on the villain scale? 10 being my God, most evil guy in town, kind of Joker level. 1 being the porcupine from, what is it, Jessica Drew.
There's no way that he's worse than Damien. So if Damien's a 10, I got to go less than 10.
Yeah, so he's somewhere in the middle. Like, 10 is Damien and Joker, right? Like, crazy, evil, just wreck. 1 is, he's moist. There we go. 1 is moist.
I don't know. He's very capable, although his plans didn't turn out. I mean, he's diabolical. So, I'd go 6.
I was going to say 6 as well. I don't think he's really that high up there, but he's competent enough that he can at least knock Ollie down for a little bit.
Yeah. Okay, I'm cool with 6. Let's make it unanimous.
I mean, he's like a C-list Batman villain originally, so 6 isn't too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens there. But, I mean, he was just... Okay, who's Rick? What's up with that? What did I miss there? Because I completely spaced out on the whole he's working for Rick thing. Who's Rick?
What?
Okay, Rick Pinzola.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I'm lost.
And Damien Dark mentioned this a couple of times. I didn't know that Blank's organization tolerated failure.
Oh.
And then Ollie said he's worked for X, Y, and Z, including Blank. And it sounded like Rip Hunter, but that it wasn't Rip Hunter.
It was Rick Pinzola. Closed captioning says it all, man.
Ah, look at you.
Yeah, I don't honestly know.
No idea.
All right.
Steven in the chat room says it's Rick Grime.
Yeah.
Crossover time.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, let's go to the island back for a second, right? So Ollie is down on the island. He kills the guard, right? And then he opens up his secret communication device, which was in a backpack, unprotected, dropped from a plane. And it turns out to be a stupid little Nexus 7 tablet with some sort of wicked plastic arm on some sort of battery. I'm like, that's a Nexus 7 tablet. And it's out in the... No shock protection, right? So it... been thrown out of a plane. What if Ollie didn't have it in his hand? It would have gone, and it's not waterproof. So what if it rains? He's got no way to contact Amanda, which is probably for the best, but I think that was a little bit of a fail. It wasn't military grade stuff.
But it looked like it was to people.
A cool olive drab case on it. So of course that makes it cool.
It looks bad. It's got to be it.
It was given to him by Argus. So it's got to be awesome.
Yeah. Argus doesn't skimp on stuff.
Except for their agents.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about Mr. Holt at all. Mr. Holt is the person from Innovation and whatever in Palmer Technology, and he's got the keys to save the company.
Curtis Holt, yeah.
Yes, Mr. Terrific.
Mr. Terrific, we know he'll end up being.
So, what do you think he's going to do to save the company?
Well, he's basically season one Felicity, I've kind of realized.
Yeah.
So, I find him quite entertaining from his rambling standpoint. To save the fam... Not the family, the company, rather. I'm sure he's got some crazy computer software program that we're going to have come out.
Either that, or it's going to be like a T-Sphere 1.0. So in the comics, Mr. Terrific has these floating, almost self-intelligent T-Spheres that can do a whole bunch of things, from medical diagnoses to electrocuting people to having scans. T-Spheres can do a lot. So it's going to be some kind of incorporation of Ray Palmer's nanotech from the third season, last episodes. And I think this is where we're going to get the T-Spheres.
I wonder if this gets used then to help bring back Ray Palmer from his shrunken state as they develop this.
That was another thing I was going to bring up is Ray Palmer still in the building?
Maybe.
I think he's in the building.
He's probably hanging out in the building because that's where he assumes people can find him to save him.
That's where the tech is to bring him back.
That's true, too. Once they recreate it. I mean, you saw the hole in the top of the building. It's going to take a while to recreate the tech to unshrink the atom.
I swear that conference room was part of that building that was like blown away, too.
I thought it was like right off of Ollie slash Palmer's office in the penthouse. It's just how you save money on set design. They had multiple conference rooms that looked exactly like that throughout the building.
Okay. Okay.
What I do like about him, though, is if we've taken Ray out of the picture, because let's face it, he was screwing with all the Elicity shippers like Stephen Wandrew. Now they've introduced a new tech guy that has great synergy with Felicity, but they have made him not a love interest because he's referencing to his husband. So now he's no threat to the Elicity shippers, but can still hang out and be best buds with her. So a nice way to solve that.
I think that was done completely on purpose. They wouldn't have the Elicity shippers going, what the hell? Why are you doing this? They can just be straight up. No, he's got a husband. You guys don't have to feel threatened by this at all.
Now, wait a minute. Just because he has a husband doesn't mean he's not interested in Felicity.
Okay, so the assumption is we don't have to worry about it.
Okay, let's remind everybody this is the CW network, so you never know.
Fair enough. I will stand corrected then.
Okay, let me go back a second. Ginny in the chat said that Rick Pinzola might be a reference to Wise Guy.
This is where my DC lack of knowledge comes into play.
Oh, man. You guys are failing me. Like, I have no DC knowledge. You guys are my DC knowledge. I have a t-shirt.
Well, it's a pizza place in New York. I'm on the Googles right now.
This is like in the off season when I ask, oh, are there any musicians in the DC universe? And everybody's like, I don't know. Like, okay, give me your all assassin band then. Come on. Let's just make something up. All right. So Ray Palmer's in the building. Mr. Terrific's going to save him. The 6-month time period was interesting, especially with the graveyard scene that we saw.
Now, at the beginning of this episode, I thought that it was going to be Jerry Ryan in the grave, somebody that, you know, he might have encouraged, felt he couldn't protect. I'm like, there we go. We know who's in the, oh, she didn't run. Damn.
No, that's too quick a reveal if that was who was in the grave.
She could come back. She just has to go back into her charge port. She'll be back.
Well, I mean, it could just be they have to rebury Sarah because she dies again. Damian Dark kills her this time.
Again. Aw. All right.
Don't do that. That's too painful.
You know, after seeing what's going on in this episode, I'm more and more convinced it's Quentin in the grave.
They are setting it up so it looks like Quentin's a dead man. I mean, we see more that he's obviously still working with Damian Dark. He's not happy about the arrangement. And now finally, Damian plays that trump card of, well, if you don't like it, I can just kill your daughter. And I was like, huh, what's he going to do when there's two daughters to kill?
So the network owner, Mr. Stephen Jondru, says in the chat, what if it's Waller? Sorrow or excitement? And I just got to go back to our conversation last time. Meh, it's not going to be Waller because he wouldn't be tearing. He'd be like, yeah!
This is true. So the question I have for you guys, though, is if Damian Dark is so in the know about Laurel and he'd be watching her so he could be able to kill her quickly, how does he not know she's the Black Canary then?
He knows.
Which means he's got to know who the Green Arrow and all those guys are, though, too. And remember, he said he wanted to know who the Green Arrow is so he can kill those close to him.
He knows now, because beforehand, the Green Arrow wasn't there. So he was watching Laurel as she was running around with Thea and Diggle. And then the Green Arrow came back, and he was like, okay, who's the Green Arrow? And Quentin spills the beans on that. So he's fully in the know now.
Did Quentin spill the beans? They never showed that he did.
No, I don't think he did.
He totally did. Totally. To save Laurel? He absolutely did.
You think they would show that on camera then?
No, I don't think he's given up Ollie yet. I get the feeling that he's cooperating to the extent that he needs to cooperate for some reason, but he's going to play a few cards close to his chest. He's always shown us to be one thing and not just a dick. An honest cop.
I see what you did there about the cards, by the way. Little reference to next week.
Oh, next week. Yeah. Yes. So I think he's been an honest cop. And he's doing this under duress. And I think he's going to keep Ollie in his back pocket as his trump card again. There we go. Yeah, just my thoughts.
You doubled down on that one.
Oh.
So I think he might actually trust Ollie a little more than he's portraying in there. He's still butthurt over things happened in the past, but knows that Oliver's the way to get him out from under Damian Dark's thumb. I think he might have joined Damian originally with the best of intentions and then seen where things started going and now wants out and can't get out because Laurel's life is threatened. Yeah, I do have to agree with Dom Can too in the chat room. It says, the whole I'm so angry at Ollie shtick is getting old, though. Completely agree.
Yep.
Especially coming from Diggle, too. I'm like, come on, dude. Everyone else has gotten over it.
Your wife got over it.
I don't think Diggle is necessarily really mad at Oliver right now. I think he's got the bigger issue of Hive on his mind right now. And the whole conversation with Laurel, those two, they just didn't keep any secrets. So it'll be interesting to see if Laurel has told Diggle what she's up to with Sarah. That would be interesting.
He's still giving him the cold shoulder and things like that, though. I mean, he's not really giving him much of the time of day. And he's like, oh, Oliver didn't have to come back. Stuff to that effect. He's not happy with him at all. I don't think all is forgiven at this point.
It might be true, but at least they're working together.
We know from the season 4 previews, there's going to be a breakdown where Felicity yells at them for not watching each other's backs. So it's, I would say the rift is not healed until after that point.
No. Yeah, I think we get that in the next episode, to tell you the truth. So.
All right.
They've got to have it out. They got to, they got to hug it out, guys. They just got to hug it out.
They got to have a bro hug when it's all said and done.
I want to take Oliver's self-defense classes, by the way.
Yeah, no doubt. I would too.
Jessica's like, huh? What? He didn't do all that much. He just threw him over the railing. No big deal. That doesn't take self-defense classes. That just takes a little sibling that you've tortured before over the railing at the Queen Mansion.
Cajun Sean in the chat actually said Felicity needs a code name, and that's true. When she calls out, and now they know you work with a Diggle, and now they know you work with a Felicity. All right, code names for everybody. But I think the executive producers have come out and said that she is not going to be Oracle. So either A, the producers lie, or B, there's going to be something more interesting or a nod to the Oracle character.
You're saying the producers would lie to us? That's never happened on this show. That's not me complaining either. Most of the times when they lie to us, it's to set up something that ends up paying off. So lie to us to make a better story. I'm totally cool with it.
How many seasons do we have to go before Diggle got a costume? So how many more seasons do we have to go before Felicity gets a nickname?
An identity concealment device.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right. Motorcycles inside the paper mill. That was interesting.
It looks cool on camera. What the hell I say?
Until you do the fast cut to them getting off the motorcycle so you know it wasn't the actors that were actually driving the motorcycles inside the building.
And then Thea doing the wheelie to show her anger as she drives off. Like, oh yeah, it's the wheelie of anger.
It's the teenage defiance.
When in the final episode, we talked about the action before, but we didn't go over it. In the final fight scene, when all four of them drop in from the ceiling in the glass sunroofs or whatever. What do you call those? The ceiling lights? That was awesome.
Skylight.
The skylights.
Skylights. Yes. Thank you. That was awesome.
So I was watching on Twitter this morning or this afternoon, I guess, when I got home from work, and the Arrow writer's like, you all request it. Someone finally made a GIF of this scene. And literally the GIF was them just dropping through the skylights on loop. And I was like, this is so cool. I forgot to save it, but I will go and find it.
Go find it.
Just go to the Arrow writer's Twitter account. They tweeted it out. It was pretty awesome.
I just want to say thank you very much to everybody in the chat room for giving us over 1,000 props each. This is like the best podcast ever. Thanks.
You guys are going to have sore clicker fingers tomorrow, I bet.
Good luck with that.
You need to go to a spa.
Post Starly Tribune Spa Day. Okay. So do you guys have anything else from the episode that we haven't covered yet before we get to news and notes and that sort of thing?
What do you guys think is happening on the island when it's all said and done? I have no clue where all this setup is leading to. I'm curious if you guys had any conspiracy theories.
I don't know who Baron Ryder is.
We've got to work in some mysticism. I think it would be easy to think it's just an opium poppy field with the wrong colored poppies, but I think there's going to be some mystical element to the island. So,
if we go back with our old Batman parallels, wasn't it a blue flower in the Christopher Nolan Batman movies that the League of Assassins used for everything? For their trippy mind screw-ups and all their concealment smoke and things like that?
That's a deep cut, my friend.
I don't know if it's a connection or not, but they do like to take good things from the other Batman movies and things like that and put them in the show or do similar things.
Cajun Chan in the chat said fear toxin.
Yeah, it did have elements of the fear toxin because the League had their own brand that was used with that blue flower. It didn't look like that kind of flower, though. And if you're in the chat right now, Jenny has a link to the GIF from the Arrow writers I was talking about.
Okay, so we didn't talk about it, but the whole throwing the guard into the minefield and then just, hey guys, I've been shipwrecked here for 3 years. And he's obviously been working out, right? He's no lack of protein. I mean, the man, he doesn't have the 3 year long beard. It's just like a couple of weeks growth on the beard and stuff.
Yeah. Fresh dirt on the clothes. And
yeah, come on, work with us. It'll be great. We have an opening. Why don't you go? Really? That fat? No, I don't believe it, but
willing suspension of disbelief on that one.
I don't understand the logical leap there for the guy to be like, hey, you've been trapped here for 3 years, but I'm going to make you be one of my thugs.
Here's a machine gun.
Yeah. have a gun. That's not going to be a problem at all.
I have no reason to kill you. Yeah, you do. He showed up and you have nothing to tell me. Kill him.
You don't recognize him? He's sort of a celebrity.
You believe his story that he just threw, that the other guy just walked through a minefield and you don't notice like the heavy footprints around the area of him carrying? I mean, your guards are useless.
Well, his guards might be incompetent. I mean, if we look at the history of goons in TVs and movie shows, they're generally mostly incompetent. Look at the stormtroopers.
Don't upset Uber Geek. He's in the... there you go.
It's a stormtrooper training ground, it says in the chair. Sorry, Uber Geek.
Chris Farrell, for real. Okay, just so you know, Uber Geek actually has a self-made set of stormtrooper armor, okay?
That's awesome.
So, yeah, that's where the stormtrooper love is coming from on his end. Although, I have never seen him shoot, so...
I wonder if he's going to Lian Yu for his stormtrooper training.
He might be. Anything else about the episode before we move on?
All I have to say is it was great to see Jerry Ryan again, you know, awesome whenever that, and she's a great actor, and whenever we get to see her in something, it's it kind of makes my day. So big shout out.
It was, by the way, the moment that the daughter showed up, you're like, okay, something's going on with that daughter. I mean, it's obvious what's going on.
I was hoping they would use Jerry Ryan for more, that it might turn into a recurring thing. And I'm hoping she comes back at some point, because it's good to see her on TV again.
It was. It was good to see her. I've seen her in a couple other things as well, but yeah, it was good to see her. All right. Is that it, Chris? Are you done?
I think I'm done for now, unless you want some more Stormtrooper jokes.
We'll save them for later. Neil, you done?
I'm good.
All right. So let's move on to a little bit of the news, which Neil has so graciously assembled for us. First of all, we'll talk about some Easter eggs. Did we catch them all? Did we talk about them at all? Do we have to go through them?
I don't think we've talked about them, in all honesty.
I didn't think so either, but we were having so much fun. I didn't know what we talked about and what we didn't. I don't know what's in this tea, so you never know. Okay, so let's talk about the Easter eggs for the episode.
Great. So in the show notes, for anybody who's listening along later, the first reference is to a Mr. Dennis in the board meeting. Now, whether or not this is a real Easter egg or just a throwaway name, but longtime DC Comics and Vertigo editor was Will Dennis. So it could have been a shout out, or it could have just been a random name thrown in there.
Right. And we did talk about this next. Curtis Holt was introduced, who's going to be this universe's Mr. Terrific. And instead of being a middle-aged guy named Michael, we know his name is Curtis, and he's got a husband at home, so he won't be stealing Felicity from Oliver.
So Lonnie Mackin, is that right? Mackin? Machine?
Mackin.
Mackin.
Mackin, I think, is how they did it.
Okay. Is a Robin and Batman villain who terrorized Gotham in the late 80s and 90s, and in between bouts of being an anti-hero.
And you might have seen him in Batman Arkham Origins if you played that game. He was in Batman Arkham Origins, and they make reference to him in Arkham Knight, the final game in the series.
So Anarchy with the A is the emblem, which was inside the main ambulance at the end. So that's what we have there.
Yeah, this was basically the birth of that villain in the Arrowverse.
The next Easter egg, I think we've already talked about. I think we've all been waiting for it. Oliver Queen for mayor. They finally brought this plot story in, so I'm excited to see where it goes.
I think we all are.
Yeah, I think we all are. And the last one, of course, we're building towards the resurrection of Sarah Lance and her becoming the White Canary. And as one Big Papa, a.k.a. Stephen John Drew, a.k.a. Little Papa, pointed out in the chat room, we did get to see the corpse coming out of the grave.
Which he thinks is hot, which doesn't surprise me, Mr. Lover of Zombies.
Cajun Sean says Mayor Queen will be impeached within 6 months.
Probably. All right, we had New York Comic Con last weekend, didn't we, folks?
Ooh, I wish I was there.
Looked so great.
It is my new thing to try to get to. I wanted to go to Dragon Con probably next year, but probably the year after that, I'll be going back home. Yes, I was born in New York City, and to go to New York Comic Con. But we have some coolest moments from there, don't we, Neil?
We do. So a new sizzle reel that combined both elements of Arrow and The Flash was aired at NYCC. And this comic book resources article that we're referencing in the show notes has listed some of the coolest elements for that. First up, and we know he's coming in episode 4 this year, John Constantine. We know that Matt Ryan's coming back, hashtag save Constantine. And yeah, we've got to deal with the supernatural, and how better to do that than with John Constantine.
That will all be cool.
A lot of the other things we've already talked about. We've talked about Echo Kellum coming back as Mr. Terrific. We've talked about Sarah and the Lazarus Pit and, you know, the NYCC sizzle reel has her emerging from the waters of, you know, the mystical, magical spa at Nanda Parbat. There's images of both the canaries fighting together in the sizzle reel, which is really awesome. And then a whole bunch of flash goodness.
Yeah, as I said before, Thea actually killed Sarah. So, and Sarah knows this, right? She turned around and was like, "You," before she was killed.
That could be awkward.
Awkward. Little Nanda Parbat.
Does that mean we're getting a little fight scene between Sarah and Thea at some point?
If I was Sarah and I came out of that hot tub, yeah, that's the first thing that I'd be doing.
Both of them are going to be a little crazy from coming out of the Lazarus pit. So it's a Lazarus pit fueled fight.
So Thea's going to be a little crazy. Sarah's going to be like mega crazy.
Yeah, she should be a lot crazy because the mythos is the longer you've been dead, the more crazy the Lazarus pit supposedly makes you.
So that's going to be fun.
That's a lot crazy.
So that's a good question, Neil. You think this season is going to happen faster than probably Chris and I think it's going to happen. So that would be like a good mid-season finale sort of thing in my book. But you're probably thinking it's going to happen in the next episode or two.
Yeah, episode 4 is apparently where they're setting it up. You know, they're off to Nanda Parbat with the body now, and we're episode 2.
Yeah.
Episode 3, they figure out how to deal with Nyssa and Roz. Episode 4, into the water with Canary.
And then what is it? Episode 6 is John Constantine. So we have a couple episodes of people going, oh my God, we got to figure out what happens before the expert comes in.
Didn't you say it's episode 4?
I thought it was episode 4.
Is it 4? Okay.
Maybe she goes into the pit and comes out at 4 and they bring Constantine at 6.
Steven, what kind of drugs are you on? It's like, please be a pillow fight. Please be a pillow fight. Please be a pillow fight. He's talking about Thea and Sarah, of course. Oh, jeez.
Of course.
You guys are killing me.
Anyways, so I think it is going to happen quicker, and that was one of the main criticisms that a lot of, not only the geek community, but I think of general watchers, people that were watching season 3 said, that while a slow burn can develop more characters, more complexities, I think what drew people into the earlier seasons and with Flash is there wasn't as much of that slow burn. It was lots of action, lots of condensed timelines, lots of fights, so let's not drag this out. If she's coming back, she's coming back soon.
Okay. Are we done with the Comic-Con sizzle stuff?
I think so.
Okay. Talking about people coming back, there is a interview with Katrina Law.
Right, where she talks about, I think it's episode 3 of season 4, she's making her return to the show. And I think one of the things that I thought was really entertaining is when she found out she got the role, it was in TV Guide. It wasn't that she got a call or anything. She saw on TV Guide she was going to be on Arrow. And I was like, that's pretty funny.
Hashtag casting fail right there. When you find out from TV Guy.
What better way for them to keep it secret than to not tell them?
And then you could go, you know, I think my contract's a little light. I think I need a little bit more per episode.
Yeah. I think if you have any interest in Nyssa Al Ghul and Katrina Law's character, I think she has been a fan favorite. She's one of my favorite characters on this show. It's a great interview. They really dive into how she's playing the character, changes from canon and what she thinks, as you've already said, SP, how she found out about it, and how she's been reacting to the fans and how she feels when she gets some of the preview scripts and how she thinks ahead to where the character is going from. So I think it's really cool. And, you know, full props again to Katrina Law. She's done a great job realizing this character. And I think I've said it before, but Arrow is great at developing strong women and strong female characters. I hope we continue to get that. And now that Felicity's out of her crying phase, I think it's going to be even better.
Well, Nyssa better be strong because she's carrying Oliver's baby.
I'm not sure.
I don't know about that.
I think Roz was standing right there. He's like, come on, guys. You need to do it.
I don't know that marriage was ever consummated.
Yeah, let's say not.
Yeah, let's go with no.
All right. So Willa Holland also had some great thoughts on an interview on becoming Speedy.
Yeah, so there's an interview on the CW channel on YouTube. Pop over and take a look or pop into our show notes. And she's talking about how much fun she's actually having playing this character. And you can imagine that if you're an actor, to play somebody that's losing it and just, you know, letting go. Yeah, I can see how that would be fun. especially now that she's a core member of Teen Arrow and a pretty deadly one at that. So pop on over to the CW's channel on YouTube and take a look at what Willa Holland has to say.
I have not seen this next interview. It's with Neil McDonough. I'm just a Neil McDonough fan. I love everything that he's done. He is, I don't like his character all the time. You know, it's not a likable character all the time, but he plays it extremely well. So, and we didn't talk about it, but did you catch the Cap reference in the episode? Language.
Yeah. So over at E! News Online, a huge interview with Neil McDonough. He talks about, again, character background and how he's translated it, and he's working with the writers to create this deliciously evil character, and some great insight into psychology and for, you know, dancing around some of the things that are to come with this character, about how he's dealing with Paul Blackthorne's character. So pop on over again and give it a read if you're a Neil McDonough fan. It's definitely worth your time.
I forgot to mention this before, but Dom Can too mentioned in the chat, do you think they may bring in Ollie's daughter anytime soon? And we do know that he has a child running out there, and the baby mama is none other than Anna Hopkins, who played Berlin on Defiance. I reached out to Anna this week. I did, and she actually communicated back with me. You boys can both validate that this happened, right?
This is correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I did ask her, said, look, we have a lot of spam speculation. Do you have anything to say about it? And she said, yeah, the producers of Arrow don't want me saying anything. They're a little bit tight-lipped. And besides, if they know something, they rarely tell me anyway. So as soon as I can get out, I will let you guys know. And thank you very much for thinking about me. I appreciate it. So she wants to say thank you to everybody on Starlight Tribune for thinking about her. But yeah, no comment, basically, from the actress. And hey, if it keeps her job, I want to see her on screen, so much the better. I was very respectful, said thank you very much. And we might be hearing from her in the future. I doubt it, but we might. So we'll just let that one go. You know, I want to say Winnie's basically the main active showrunner from day to day now on Arrow because Mark Guggenheim's so divested and stuff. But she's got a couple of things that we put in the show notes, right, Neil?
Yeah, definitely. She's come out with a couple of little voice snippets and little articles. She provides us both an article on Roz and Nyssa and how the two characters are dealing with it, what kind of conflict that we can expect in the next episode at Nanda Parbat, how Nyssa is actually dealing with now having to report up to Merlin, how Merlin is dealing with being the new Roz. It's spoiler light. It's just a few little comments. Definitely worth popping over and checking it out.
I'm just happy to see news on Malcolm because I love me some John Barrowman.
We're going to see him next week, aren't we?
I'm excited.
Yeah. Okay. We have an extended trailer, which most people should probably, if they're Arrow fans, they better have seen this by now.
I haven't watched yet, I'll be honest. I generally don't get the itch to watch the extended trailers until like Friday or Saturday.
Yeah, I'm so busy podcasting that is probably the weekend when I'm actually producing the podcasting, putting it in the notes. I'm like, I haven't seen that yet. Yeah, so that does happen. Sorry, guys.
I don't know about you. I always am torn whether or not I should watch the trailers at the end of the shows that I'm following. Obviously not Arrow because we're expected to talk about it. But the other shows like Flash and everything, do I want to spoil myself for the coming week or do I want more goodness?
Well, Neil, you and I come from the same fandom, being we were both fans of a podcast, a very successful podcast on the BSG show called Galactic Water Cooler. And Sean, Chuck, and Audra, the hosts of that podcast, were very, very particular about wanting to either spoil stuff or not spoil stuff. And they always said, and I think they changed towards the end, were like, who cares? But at the beginning, they're like, okay, we're going to get into the trailer for next week. So if you don't want to hear about that, it's been fun. Thank you for listening to the podcast. And that's it. We just spoil it here on this podcast, as we said at the beginning. But I watch the trailers for everything as long as my DVR catches it, because I'm usually podcasting while these shows are on the air.
That's what YouTube's for, SP. CW puts it all on their YouTube channel.
Here's my dilemma on that. While I'm at work, where I would be watching YouTube during a down moment, I have no... The speed is so slow that YouTube will not connect, even on the lowest quality.
Oh, no.
So I have no ability at work to do that. So when I'm home, I'm like either watching something, I'm working out, or I'm in pre-production. So I don't get to watch them if the DVR doesn't catch them. It's just the way it is.
Moving along to our next news item, we have a whole bunch of video interviews from the cast of Legends of Tomorrow from New York Comic Con. If you're a fan of Legends of Tomorrow and you want to see some of the characters talk about what to expect with their characters, especially Hawkgirl, Ray Palmer, you know, Arthur DeVille, who's playing Rip Hunter, pop on over, check out the article. There's a ton in there, and I think we're in for a real treat when we get Legends of Tomorrow. What about you guys?
Oh, yeah, I can't wait.
It is my most excited anticipation, aside from Arrow. Arrow was my most anticipated this fall season premiere. Legends of Tomorrow, definitely. I like Agent Carter. I do. And X-Files, that's great. I think Legends of Tomorrow just had little, because it's like a team. Agent Carter is like S.H.I.E.L.D. in the past, or the MCU in the past. And it's like a slow build. It's not the grandiose thing that we have with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or the MCU. Legends Tomorrow, that's like, boom, here's everybody. Here you go. And so I can't wait. All right. And then the last thing that we have in the news and notes is something that never, ever happened.
Yeah, I'll take this one. So I was looking around today for other news that we might have missed. And so writer David Goyer actually pitched a Green Arrow script, I think 5 or 6 years ago now. And it was a Green Arrow story, and where he would be breaking out of a prison. We can assume it would be either Arkham or Iron Heights. And it would focus on not only Oliver Queen, but there would be Joker, there would be Penguin, Supermax, exactly it. And it would have been a villain-centric and Green Arrow movie. And apparently he was told, nah, that would never fly.
Well, I mean, it was a different era for superhero movies at that point in time. So I can kind of see that they were kind of trying to bank off the success of Batman Begins to try and start something else. And that was probably the only Batman Begins was the only dark superhero thing out there. And DC was trying to keep other stuff light. Look at like Superman Returns at the time and things like that. It's in today's DC movie universe, I think a Supermax could happen.
So Neil, as you're controlling the schedule for this podcast, as Haley does for Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., because I have no control over the contents of the podcast, let me throw this out to you. In the off season, so next summer, I would actually like to go through like the first comic book movies, like that were really comic book movies. So Batman, 1989, X-Men, Blade. I would like to review them. And I know they're not all DC, but I think it really sets the tone for where we are today in comic book shows and movies. So put that on the schedule, would you?
Yeah, I'll get right on that.
You also need to put the first appearance of Green Arrow in Smallville on there just to punish SP.
I've already seen that. I hate that.
But we haven't talked about it on camera.
Yes, you have to get on camera about it.
All right. Okay. So if you like this podcast, if you like us blabbing about Arrow, you have to check out all the other great podcasts we have on the Gonna Geek Network. We have a plethora of one. We mentioned Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., covering Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. There's the Crimson Comet talking about Flash. We're hoping to get a Supergirl podcast on the network really soon. Another podcast that we have on the network is Tyrion's Landing. They cover Game of Thrones. Now, since Game of Thrones is in the off season, they get together once in a while and either talk about news and notes of what's going on in Game of Thrones, or they talk about other interesting stuff, like in episode 94, they talk about the Emmy edition. So Tyrion's Landing is talking about the mountain of Emmys Games of Thrones received this year. They also have an update on Hair Watch 2015, talking about the beard report, the Hair Watch. Join them, won't you? So go check them out. That is Tyrion's Landing on the GunnaGeek.com network, episode 94, Emmy edition. Now, next week, we have Arrow episode 3 of season 4 Restoration, and we're really looking forward to that. I saw the trailer. It was great. Felicity machine gun. That was so cool. I can't wait to see that. So there you go. And stay tuned afterwards. We will get all your comments on Blab. We will open the seat. You're welcome to come by. I do have a voicemail. Are you guys ready for a voicemail? I have a voicemail from Black Adam.
Yeah, bring it on.
Hey guys, this is Adam, just calling in with my feedback on this week's episode of Arrow. So, when Seven of Nine decided to run for mayor, she announced that in the same room that one of the previous mayors was killed in, I'm pretty sure. And then, during the chase scene that follows, they just did a quick shot of Oliver and Anarchy running through the Cylon Opera House without really taking advantage of how beautiful of a place that is. The Felicity stuff in Palmer Tech was kind of just there, but I'm guessing they're just in the very early phases of setting that up as a season arc, so I'll give them time on that. Yeah, Thea is getting pretty out of control, and as soon as they made it clear that Oliver hadn't told Laurel about the Lazarus Pit, I was like, oh, okay, that's how they're bringing Sarah back. Though I did half expect the grave to be empty when they opened the casket. I do find it interesting that they're going further into the Longbow Hunters storyline back on the island in the flashbacks, and I'm guessing that China White will be involved somehow because, well, she was in the comic. Can't wait to hear what you guys think. Talk to you later. Bye.
Thanks, Adam. We really appreciate the voicemail. If you want to get a hold of us on the voicemail line, you can catch us at 612-888-CAVE or 612-888-2283. Now, we talked about the Opera House before. I just really enjoy seeing that place. Now, Neil, you've been there, right?
Yeah. So living here in Star City in Central City, it's one of our local theaters. It's actually where not only do they have the symphony, it's called the Orpheum Theater, but they've got a lot of shows. I actually just saw Chris Cornell, the lead singer from Soundgarden there a couple of weeks ago. So every time I'm in there, I'm like, oh, this is where the Cylons are. So, yeah, definitely. And in fact, the stage where they did the announcement, if you go up the stairs and part the curtains behind them, you would have the same view where Gaius Baltar was looking down on the candelabra and the stage below it.
That's so cool.
It's pretty awesome. And there's beautiful architecture in there. I've put the link in the Blab chat.
I wonder if any of those actors ever go back there and like, oh, this is where it was all came together. It's right here. Because some of them live up there, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, definitely.
I think you just need to walk in there and start playing All Along the Watchtower on your phone or something.
I actually have the version that was done by Bear McCurry. I have that on my phone, and it's a ringtone, actually. We were talking about that in our chat. It's one of my many ringtones is the Bear McCurry version of All Along the Watchtower. It's my favorite version of the song as well. All right, you guys have anything else to say about the voicemail before we move on?
The only other comment is, so we talked about the Longbow Hunters and how that comes into play. Mm-hmm. And I think what Adam might have meant to say was year one, because the Longbow Hunters is when Ollie and Black Canary move to Seattle to get out of the superhero biz. And they basically track rapists and murderers and urban thugs, where you get the majority of the island storyline with China White. And as we talked about earlier, is in Andy Diggle's year one story. But if we bring more Longbow Hunters into this, I am all over that, because for me, that is a classic line.
It's like,
or a classic storyline.
I actually read Longbow Hunters because Neil gave it to me. I'm like, this is, okay. I don't argue with Adam on comics at all. It's just like I don't argue with you guys. So I'm like, I don't know, but thank you. Thank you for maybe possibly clearing that up. We'll hear from Adam next week if you got it wrong.
Adam, if I got it wrong, man, dial on back in and tell me.
And all right. Adam, you can be like Adam and call us at 612-888-CAVE. I just wanted to get that out there one more time. That's 612-888-2283.
And also, we have all of our other contact information on the Gonna Geek Network, and you can find that at GonnaGeekNetwork.com. Any last words at Roundtable Nerds?
Wig.
Oh, good one.
At Neil Isn't Witty.
I'm going to use a hyphen. Cray cray.
And I can be found on Twitter at Stargate Pioneer, and I will go with Beard. This has been...
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at Incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.
Yeah.
Well, we enjoyed having you. Thank you.
We definitely will be here every week, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Time.
It's minus 3 hours. Come on. It's
well, I always math. When I think about Pacific, I don't know why I don't stop. I always go to Hawaii time. So that's like, it depends on the time of year. It's like six or
wishful thinking, SP.
Hey, Jenny, what's up?
What's up?
Hey, Jenny.
What can we do for you about Arrow, ma'am?
Well, so two things. The Easter eggs, I hadn't checked on those. So that was fun to go through all the little Easter eggs. I liked that. But, I love the kind of Death Watch. Like, who do we all think it's going to be? And that's just cracking me up.
Death Watch 2016.
That's exactly it.
I was at lunch with my daughter today after a doctor's appointment, and we spent about 15 minutes arguing about it. And like the boys next door in the booth next door started getting into it. She's like, "Dad, shut up! Dad, shut up!" Like, okay.
I know. And my son's in on it too. We're all just sitting here taking fun guesses. So that was my fun with Arrow this week.
And then Neil killed me with a 16-minute recording yesterday. I'm like, Neil, come on, man. I got to get to bed.
With not my intention.
Oh, man. It was an awesome segment. It was okay. So what I'm talking about is a new podcast that I've released. Called Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. Longbox Edition. Adam, who we talked about before, Neil, and my co-host on Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., Lauren, they do comic book news. So I broke that out of Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., made it into its entirely new little podcast. And I had all these back episodes. So that's what the 14 podcasts that I produced over the weekend
breaking
were.
All of those out for the comic book news part of it.
It's the same thing that you hear in the Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. show. So if you're listening to Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., don't worry about it. I just got many hits for people that were like, can you do comic book news? Can you do comic book news? I'm like, okay, well, here you go.
Yeah. Well, because it is. I mean, honestly, a lot of times, I mean, I love the Legend of S.H.I.E.L.D., but I stick around also because I want to hear the comic book news because, again, that's why we listen to you guys. We don't have the time to check everything out. So it's great to hear about it.
We don't have the time either, but we forego sleep.
Well, wait a minute, guys. Wait a minute. I've been thinking about this since we mentioned it on the podcast. It really depends on how much plastic surgery Katie Lotz has had.
Oh. embalming fluid.
Yeah. Sorry, Katie. I just had to go there. But you got to admit, it's kind of funny because the body should be a lot more decomposed than it is. And she looked, aside from a little vampirish thin, she looked really good.
Fair enough. I mean, she'd been there, 6 months to a year almost at that point?
By now, because she died in episode 1, season 3.
So it's a full year.
It's been about a year. Yeah.